B-Pod Studios.
Our next guest is a nationally recognized sports executive who writes about sports law issues for The Athletic and is also the executive director of the Morat Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova University. Our good buddy Andrew Brandt joins us on the Comcast Business Highline Beyond Fast. Andrew, how are we doing today?
Michael, good to be with you amid this deepening crisis. I didn't expect the NFL to be transacting business today, but here we are. You know, they decided, as the league is shut down, they decided they're going to have their business of football week going. You know, I know there are different views about normalcy versus shutting down, but they're going full steam ahead.
They are, and we'll get to the details on this in a second. First of all, is the law school, Villanova University, closed down?
Yeah, we're online only, and initially they said that kids can come and go and as they please, but it's going to be online only, and they since have told them to go home. So it's the new normal now. Everything's going to be online, and classes and any office hours, etc. That's how we're doing it.
Wow. All right, let's get to the CBA, and there also is a couple trades here I want to talk to you about. And signings. So the new CBA, 10 years, and the big hook is that they say players could earn about $5 billion over the length of this deal. Now, that seems like a lot of dough, but the deal doesn't look that like it's that good of a deal, and it passed only by a very close vote under controversial circumstances. Tell us what the players got and what they didn't get here.
Mike, I was vocal throughout the past couple weeks. I did not feel this was a good deal. I thought it was inequitable. You know, I'm not a hot take winners and losers guy, but I just think to give up that massive give of a 17th game, the most important headline of the deal, 17 games and 11 years, an extraordinarily long term, I don't feel they got enough. I feel like, you know, the headline for them is probably, well, you know, the minimums go up $100,000. Just like guys like me and Howie and Joe Banner, we knew that, you know, if you give some early money in the deal, you entice the players, you get long-term cost certainty. That's what they did with the entire player group. So what happened, Mike, for people who don't know, is the executive council of the union, they were against this deal. Then it went to the player reps, and they were lukewarm for it, 17-14, one abstention for those 32. And then last week, it went to the full player populace. And oh my God, I mean, it was down to like the last vote where it passed by a handful of votes. So we are left with basically 1,000 of the 2,000 players being dragged in to an 11-year deal for the next, you know, till 2030. It just seems odd to me that this deal passed and the way it passed.
Well, do you agree that there are more have-nots than haves that passed this deal? Because all they're looking at, well, my money's going to go up. You know, the marginal type of player. My money's going to go up. And the logistics of it, the player shares will go up to 48%. And then when the 17th game is added, 48.5%. So they're looking at that like, you know, that this is going to make my life better. Is that the way you think it played out?
Well, I do, but I mean, listen, there was this narrative out there that it's stars versus the rank and file, and the minimum guys are going to jump in because the extra 100,000, and I get all that, but here we are, 1,000 players said, no, they're not 1,000 stars. And this idea that Aaron Rodgers and J.J. Watt and Russell Wilson are, you know, just looking out for themselves. No, if they were looking out for themselves, they'd say, yeah, take the deal, whatever, we're cool. But they say don't take the deal. So I think they really do care about this whole player population. And they're practice squad guys. There's a lot of people voting against this deal. And at the end of the day, we're going to 17. You know, we're never, ever going back to 16. We'll probably go to 18 the next CBA. And somehow, some way, the 17th game became a non-negotiable from the player side to a non-negotiable from the owner's side, which a lot of players are like, how the hell did that happen?
I find this very interesting that they actually, now this won't be official until, more days have to go by before it becomes official, but it's agreed to in principle. So, like, what would have been the result had the players said no? The owners were dug in to get this thing passed. Would they have locked them out?
See, I think there was a narrative about that that I think is really unfair, and somehow the fear narrative took over. People are acting like this deal is done now. You know, the deal is done a year from now. It had 12 months left. This was an early deal. So somehow it got out there that, hey, players turned this down. They're going to rub their noses in it like a dog who pooped on the carpet. They're going to make a worse deal. They're going to lock them out. We're going to get XFL players next year. I'm like, what? Because the owners need the TV deals. They're desperate to get them. They need two things for the TV networks. They need labor peace, so they're not negotiating with who knows what's going to happen next year. And they need 17 games. And the key to both those things was the players. So I'm not sure where this sort of fear comes from. I don't think the owners would have said, well, screw you, we're not negotiating. You know, we'll see a lockout. I don't think that's the case.
So if they would just held the line, they could have next year gotten involved back into the process.
Well, again, now we're in a mess financially. And obviously there was talk earlier on, like they need to do these labor deal to get the TV thing going right away. Mm-hmm. And obviously no TV deal is going to happen anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But assuming this crisis is over in the next 8 or 9 months, yeah, I thought the players would be in good position to get a better deal, a shorter deal. Maybe if it's a 17th game, get a 50-50 split, something like that.
All right. In addition to the like, they didn't get the $250,000 for the 17th game, which was thrown out there and dangled in front of them. So in addition to the little percentage increase, what exactly in your mind did they get that was good?
I sort of look at it when we look back in 5 years, or when I'm teaching or we're teaching your sports law class, what about that 2020 CBA? What was the thing? And the thing from the owner's side is definitely 17 games. The thing from the player side, I don't know, extra $100,000, some benefits, more practice squad, more, a couple more roster spots. Mm-hmm. It seems to me, Mike, that the owners, those weren't tough gives. I mean, the tough give was, I guess, going from 47 to 48 to 48.5. But beyond that, I'm like, where would the owners really push? If the player, I mean, they're not going to give extra practice squad spots. I mean, they're not going to give extra benefits. They're not going to reduce marijuana testing. So, you know, that's why I've had a problem with this deal.
Are the lawyers for the NFLPA at fault here?
You know, I don't know. This was negotiated by the present leadership. Now we have a new president, J.C. Treader's in there. I just feel like they were as scared as this narrative everyone else had, that the owners would walk away. Now, to me, that's negotiating, right? The owners say, well, you better take this deal. Yeah. It could be lockout. But, you know, the players are the most important partner. Here's the upshot, Mike. I worry about this player discontent. Just like a player holdout, doesn't like his contract, holds out, does some bad things, you know, disobedience. Mm-hmm. I think that could happen here. I know that it's not like a player contract and you can just give them $100,000 or whatever, but I just worry that especially some star players are like, you know, maybe the league asked them to do a TV thing or the league asked for a marketing thing and they're like, nah, you know, we don't like you guys, you know, the way you screwed us on the deal. So something else could happen here.
Let's talk about a couple of other things that are happening. You know, we get the Eagles are zeroed in on free agency for this week, and we've already had a big signing with Austin Hooper. So let me ask you about that. And we're talking with Andrew Brandt, the executive director of the Morehead Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova. The Hooper deal, how does that impact the Ertz situation here?
Well, it's such a new market, you know, for that position, and I think George Kittle will set an even newer market and a higher market coming up soon. So we've got the top-end market that's going to be redefined. And I don't know if that means Ertz looks at that and says, I want a renegotiation. The Eagles look at that and say, that's too rich for our blood and we'll stay with what we have or we'll move to another level. So those are situations where every player that does a deal a couple, 3, 4 years ago is going to say, wow, that market's really passed me by. You know, obviously, we'll see where it goes with Zach, but we've got a new market in that position.
Okay. I wonder what Ertz is thinking here. All right, in the big trade, I'm curious to get your views on DeAndre Hopkins to the Cardinals with a fourth-round pick. They get David Johnson to Texas with a second-rounder. It seems kind of out of whack, but maybe I'm missing something.
Well, you asked about the NFLPA doing the deal. I don't get the Texans. You know, now they're in a coach-GM position right now. They don't have a GM. They have the coach. And that's really hard. That is really hard. I was in Green Bay a few years. Ron Wolf retired. We had Mike Sherman in that role. And Mike would always say to me, hey, Andrew, you know, I'm going to make you the bad guy here. And I'm like, I get it. Because a coach has to cajole and inspire and get the guy to run through a brick wall. And a GM's got to be hard and done emotional and looking forward. And here you got O'Brien trying to do both. And he gave away Clowney. And they had to pay half of Clowney's salary last year. Now they're giving away their other best player for a running back that's had issues on the field. So I don't get it. I don't know what Houston's doing. It just seems like, unless your name's Bill Belichick, you can't really play that role, and he's not doing it well.
Mm. All right, last thing. Any inside info or where the Eagles will go here free agency-wise?
I don't, but, you know, not the fact I live here or anything. It's just when you're in the league, you know the Eagles are doing something. They are one of those teams that's going to be active. So I don't know who or when or how, but I know they're going to be active. They always are. And as they've talked about, they're kind of turning over the team a little bit, getting a little younger. Free agency is the sweet spot. Guys in their 24, 25, 26-year-old range. So I think they'll be very active.
All right. Sounds good. Andrew, always a pleasure. We'll catch up.
Likewise, Mike. Take care.
All right. There he is, Andrew Brandt.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.